Lincoln, Gothic.
DPS. Go. Inco. Go. PUS. Go. Surgeon. Go. Booster. Go. Copy that. We have a go from you guys.
This is Talking Sound.
You are hearing is the amazing Iggy T and the Crazy Makers out of Ojai, California. The song is All Caught Up. They are here today to talk about their new album that is coming out, Just Can't Get Enough. Welcome to the show, Sarah Todd and David Franz from Iggy T and the Crazy Makers. How are you guys doing today?
Hey, good. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
Thanks,
welcome,
Chris.
To the show. Welcome to the show. You know, when I first started talking with your PR people a couple weeks ago and started getting links tagged around from my friend who introduced us, I was like, man, this I have been in an Iggy T loop for the last couple of weeks on Spotify and stuff like that. If anything with a horn in it, I'm at least going to give 3 days of my life to listen to. I am a big believer in horn sections and the fact you could put anything to a horn and people will dance. That's just how it works. You know, it goes straight up from punk to ska suddenly when you put a horn to it. And suddenly you can dance to it. And what you guys are doing with the mix of soul, R&B, funk, rock, blues, like there is literally a panoply of sounds and influences going on, not only in the sound itself, but in the production as well, done by David. How did you two guys meet? How did this whole project get started?
Well, I have to say, panoply is one of my favorite words. So,
ooh,
thank you
nice.
For you know for using that. We met at a jam circle several years ago. I was playing guitar, Sarah was singing, and we met in the dark. We hadn't seen each other. We actually just heard each other first, and we're both pretty impressed with what we heard. That's for sure. Sarah, I mean, you had an amazing pickup line, so to speak.
A band pickup line. Yeah.
Yes.
The jam circle was primarily acoustic instruments, and in true David Franz fashion, he walks out and plugs in an electric, and I didn't really see this whole thing go down, but of course I heard it. And, I loved what he was playing, you know, just a classic noodler. And I said, hey, guy in electric, what's your name? Thanks for taking us to Magical Guitar Land. And the rest was history. We got together chatting about music. And as it turns out, we have very similar taste in music, which is, it's really rare, in my experience at least, to have a friend around who has such similar taste in music, such that there's no moment of cringe when they share a song with you. You don't have to pretend, you just really dig it genuinely. And
yeah,
we found that that overlap in some of the more contemporary stuff, like the Alabama Shakes and the Black Keys. And I shared with David my love of old soul and how that type of music really inspired me. And he shared his love of blues with me, and we kind of overlapped in the rock realm and really wanted to combine those sounds into a more contemporary pop presentation. And that's kind of how this whole record came about. We thought we'd give it a crack. And this is what came out. We also have, I think the record, according to what people say, has a little bit of jazz influence as well, which of course is something that David brings to the table. And for me, it also has a little bit of R&B, which is just the way that my heart beats. So,
yeah. And, you know, like cool. I told your PR company, I was like, I am a huge Huey Lewis and the News fan. And it throw, especially some of your other songs really throw me back to that sound, of when the R&B and rock really started commingling together in that time. So it's nice to hear a resurgence of that. And that you guys are really forefronting it.
That's just the power of love there, Chris, you know, it's got to come out. But Carl, our sax player, I mean, holy smokes, what a super talented guy that guy is.
Yeah.
Local Ojai guy, lead sax, tenor sax player in Big Bad Voodoo Daddy.
Yeah.
And I mean, and just a first class human being. And to be able to be, that we're honored to have him play with us.
Oh, yeah.
What a gift.
He's also just like one of my favorite humans in the whole world. And he and I have this funny ongoing joke that as a vocalist, and I always said to David, I'm going to find a band of brothers. You watch, we're going to live track a record. That's my dream. I want to do it. And we first met Carl, and I said, I want Carl in the band. And it was, we weren't even really sure what the plan was for the band, but all I said was, I just love Carl and I want him to be in the band. And for a vocalist who's generally existing in the top line, to pick a horn player first is kind of like, what's that sound like?
Yeah.
What's that band going to be like? I've got a drummer, producer, and a sax player. We're just going to, and a vocalist. We're going to have fun.
Well, and you know, what I love about what you just said is we're going to live track an album. What was so attractive about the concept of live tracking to you as opposed to full on studio post-production on every track, things like that?
Well, David Franz as the musical polymath over there. I witnessed him recording records by himself and playing all of the instruments and doing all of the aspects of production and really getting kind of in an echo chamber and just a pile of work. And I'm just a sucker for connection and collaboration. And I also feel like I have a very old soul, much like David does, but I kind of opened my mind to the idea of getting a group of people together to interpret the songs as opposed to putting it all on David to play all of the instruments. And, you know, I sat down with him for all of the moments of production and of course had my two cents, but I was not turning the knobs. And to be able to have that experience in a live studio recording session. And it was just, it really struck a chord with me by way of building community and a brotherhood and a sisterhood. We had them over for dinner every Tuesday, and I just got to make everyone food and share what we were working on and practice, or we would meet up at the studio and I'd just bring a big ass meal and we'd chill together, have a couple of drinks and eat a bunch of food and start recording. And a lot of the record was recorded with this super raw, we just threw them a song and you know, pushed record. So a lot of these were, you know, second third take. And just that magic of the newness really kind of translates.
I love hearing that. David, how often is it that you have the opportunity or that you actively produce in that way in the studio?
I'll tell you this. I was so grateful for Sarah for pushing that because I've been working for years and years, mainly with artists that are, you know, kind of all over the world. And so being in the same room was very difficult, even just to get with the singular artist, but much less trying to get a band together around that. Yep. And so when Sarah kind of like really pushed for this, and then we found, I mean, once we got to Ojai, it was like, holy smokes, there are some really great players in this small little town.
Yeah.
And Sarah was super active and like very intentional on picking certain people that fit right in with our little group of awesome humans first and foremost, and then super badass musicians. And so when we get to go into the studio and we say, here's the song, here's the basic chart, and they can just interpret it right there and then, and we get that energy, it was magic.
Yeah.
Absolute magic.
And it translates is what's great. As someone who spent years as a live in-house engineer and booking bands at my venue, things like that, there was nothing more crushing than hearing a press package come through the door, great band, you put them in a lineup for a show, and then they show up and it's like, well, you have one horn player, not a horn section. It's like, well, yeah, you know, that's just what we used in the studio. That's not what we actually have. It's like, oh, well, that's great. Because it can be hard, like you said, to get that many people in the studio to be able to manage that, especially nowadays. But I've always found that whenever you do have the opportunity to do it the way that y'all have, number one, the musicians themselves that are playing now have a lot more invested in the project personally. They aren't just playing a representation of somebody else's material and trying to do a faithful representation, you know, which is so frequently the case in modern day studio sessions, where they do things via distance. They aren't in the same room. Drums will be tracked in one place, maybe with bass at the same time. But it's pretty rare that it happens where you've got four or five people set up and everything is mic'd and you are hitting record at the same time. Myself, I find that completely changes the vibe of the way an album sounds whenever it's recorded.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Thanks for seeing that and appreciating that.
Well,
yeah.
I worked with live jam bands for a long time, and they would want to do a fully produced album, and I would always try to steer them to the live version. We can isolate ourselves, but let's all be in the same room or at least in eyesight of each other where you can have the head nods that you have. Because other than that, you know, you're losing some of the actual synergy that happens between musicians. And that is the intangible magic.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will say, I'll give a shout to David that he made a lot of great music all by himself in the studio and just meeting up with someone to record vocals. And, you know, he made incredible sounds from the isolation of his studio. But this just has its own special aesthetic and it has its own special heartbeat because of the nature of the recording process and the nature of the family vibe that was built in and around it. So, but if anybody can do it without having the people in the room, I've seen that David can do that.
And which process do you prefer, David, as a producer?
Oh my gosh, if we can have multiple people in the room together and we're vibing, that's definitely the best, building the energy. Mm-hmm. I also, you know, I can get super tweaky and really enjoy, you know, where I lock myself in the studio for, you know, a bunch of hours and try the same guitar solo 57 times until I get it the exact way that I want it, you know, or something. Sure. So I can kind of dig into that part of it, the anal retentive, like perfectionist versus the complete opposite, where you do several takes of a song and you just like, oh, well, that was the best of what we got.
Yeah.
And we're going to work with that because it feels great.
Yeah. And, you know,
and it might not be perfect, but it actually is perfect because it's a vibe that we created. We captured that moment.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as, like I said, as someone who worked in live music for so long, that's what I appreciate from it is it does have that raw energy behind it. And the first track that we actively listened to a few minutes ago, the All Caught Up, Sarah. What was some of the inspiration behind writing that? The energy behind that in and of itself, I think, really expresses a lot of what this band is about.
A little sassy. There's a little sass in the All Caught Up song. And it also, you know, I'm just a sucker for funk. And I love the way that this song kind of was translated. It lived many lives before it landed here. And the moment that we were in this one actually took on more lives than any. Most of the songs, maybe Living With Your Ghost, took on the same amount of lives. But this particular song just went, I feel like it started almost kind of folky. And I was like, I just kept pushing back and saying, it's not quite there yet. Like, can we get more Stevie Wonder? This is not quite right. And for whatever reason, I think it's usually Carl, that pinch hitter Carl comes in and plays a horn line. I'm like, that's the song that we're trying to get to. And it was, I swear it, we came to it in the live session and I was like, more of that. Yes. And kept going and pushing. And as far as lyrically, I think it's pretty straightforward. The song is about being in relationship, about when those moments of relationship feel challenging and unsustainable. And the self-awareness of that process for me of realizing that I am giving my power away in relationship, and I'm getting all stuck and all caught up on the drama of relationship. I'm not singing like I used to. There's a line in there that a lot of people ask about I found that diamond ring, and I called off a relationship that in the past that was edging toward engagement, and when I found that, I didn't tell the person that I found it, but I realized that was not the type of relationship that I wanted to be in for my life. I wasn't going to be a puppet on a string and the reclamation of self and the reclamation of power to choose and to deliberately choose the type of relationship that is sustainable for me being my highest self and my most effective self to fulfill my purpose in the world. And to let's all just be gentle with each other in this process, because it doesn't have to be a personal thing. And we can present it in a way that makes people move their bodies and feel something and in like a fun, uplifting, upbeat song. Yeah. So that's kind of how the expression came to be.
Well, yeah, and the one thing that I love about the lyric and the lyric style you have is the honesty behind it. You really do get into some topics, let's just say, in what you're expressing through your lyric. And, you know, there's a lot of songs out there that are catchy and great, and when you start really kind of peeling the onion apart, you just end up with a bunch of onion. You know, like there's just a bunch of stuff on the floor and you're like, well, that evolved into nothing. And it's catchy and it's out there and it's great, you know? But it's not necessarily saying anything. It's not really charging the listener to, like you're saying, reclaim your personal power.
Yeah.
Things like that. So that the fact that you are incorporating such messages, such uplifting messages regarding such heavy topics in your lyric, kudos to you guys.
Hey, thanks.
Because it's not everybody that's doing that out there or that has even the lyric skill and capacity to be able to do it without just going straight into entendre or, you know.
Cliche.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to use a cliche. I'm just playing. Thank you. Because that's the exact word that I was looking for. And it's hard as a songwriter myself. Like I've got reams of music that some people have listened to that know me. And they've heard it, and that's great. It will never be out there. I will never put it out there because, well, I'm just not a lyricist. Cool that I wrote it, and very important part of my musical journey. But I'm not a lyricist in that way. I'm not somebody who can write something without saying it. If you know what I mean, I can't not use the cliche. Go ahead, David.
I would say that it's a skill that evolves. So the more that you write, the better that your stuff will get. And you have to write 100 songs to get one good one. It's just like, I mean, I've been writing songs for decades, and I still feel like I have a lot of work to do. And I keep hoping like the next one is going to be even better. And I think they do get better.
Sure.
But I think for you, you know, it's like, you might say, well, I'm not a lyricist, but you know, if you spent more time, I mean, shoot, you have a podcast, you have multiple podcasts, you are talking, you are expressing yourself all the time.
Absolutely.
You have tons of lyrical content right here.
Sure. And
for example,
that's
you can write a song about David is what he's trying to say.
I am going to write a song about David.
Yeah, I may have written a couple songs about David also.
Oh. And that's some of what I was trying to get to there real quick, Sarah, was what is your process as far as writing? where do you start? Is it something where you're walking down the road and it just hits you? Is it something where the melody comes first and you start putting lyric to it? How do you normally go about, how does your muse come to you?
I love that question.
Whenever
Thank you
you're,
for asking.
Absolutely.
It's a precious question to me because it's my favorite thing to do in life. And there is no one answer. And that's kind of one of my hard rules, is that there are no rules when I'm creating. Mm. And I don't have the, I think one of the reasons that David and I make a really good creative partnership is because I don't have the technical training that he has. So for David, having spent time in school and knowing the theory of things and knowing the technical aspects of music creation, and for me not having done that, but having these songs in my heart and having this rhythm that I can tap into, and this muse that I can tap into and feel and identify and get down and transcribe, that has kind of been a beautiful partnership for us to bring the organic songwriting aspects into the technical space as well. And for me, I mean, just walking down the street, I could see something that evokes an emotion in me that helps me connect with the world around me or the people around me, or helps me kind of get a sense of what other people are experiencing in their humanness, and that helps me understand myself. And through that process, if I can capture that emotion, then I can create something that hopefully will resonate with the other people. I hear melodies all the time. I use my phone and my voice memos to capture melodies all the time. And sometimes those melodies come out with the lyrics that stick, and sometimes they just come out with, you know, random words that never end up seeing the light of day, but the idea is captured and that can be translated later on when I sit down to give it some time and attention. It can happen a lot of times if I'm listening to music that inspires me, you know, I'll turn it off. And then as I'm moving about my day, I'll hear something, and then I'll kind of know to associate it with that sound, which is helpful because I can then share that with David and say, oh man, I went down this rabbit hole of this genre of music. Here's some reference tracks that really inspired this particular melody. I'm hearing it with this type of bass sound or this type of beat. And a lot of times too, I record in my phone a guitar line or a beat or a bass line, a hook. So
just like mouth guitar.
I mouth all the things.
Okay. Totally. I'm just letting people know that's what you do. Literally. Yeah. Like give your sound engineer an idea of what you're talking. You know, I'm looking for that Jackson Brown sound. What the heck do you mean, man?
Oh,
that could mean 100 different things.
And when the mouth sounds start going into the contemporary production realm, you wouldn't believe some of the sounds that I make out of my mouth. And I'm like, no, you have to find this sound in that box. It sounds like, and no, I don't know what that sound is. Yes, you do. There's a sound in that computer that sounds like this. It's important that you find it.
I hear a Sarah Todd plug-in is what I hear. I hear a Sarah Todd plug-in in development for all of us noise musicians out there.
There have been times that David just is like, in our collaboration, I'm just like, let me get on the MIDI controller, and he'll just give me the drop-down menu, and I'm like, I'll find it. I know it. It's there. It's a very particular bell sound, and I'll just start poking around on the keyboard, and the processes look different for almost every song.
You could bring back that age of the hidden track and have just an entire track assembled out of the vowel sounds that she sends you. Like, this is how we assembled this album right here, folks. This is your favorite song, all in the mouth sounds that she sent me.
I do make demos of layers of acapella songs.
That's great, though.
We'll just have to watch out that we don't get sued by Disney for all the Chewbacca sounds that come out of here. There's a lot of Wookiees going on.
You know,
that's one of my specialties.
It's interesting, though, to break down this process, because that's something that I love to talk to musicians about, is that nitty gritty process of creation. Like when my arrangement and composition teacher got a hold of me and was like, listen, I understand the notation that you're trying to do here, but you're not musically apt. And she was being very nice. She was being very nice. You know, it was a hard rapier cut, but she came back and was like, you know, what you're trying to do is way beyond your technical realm. And it's understandable that you do not read and write music well. But the concept that you have and the recording that you've given me that goes along with this, I can see what you're trying to do. And she started directing me to more people like Karlheinz Stockhausen and Philip Glass, people like that who, yes, composed note on the page, but they also composed in a straight visual realm where, now that I'm familiar with digital editing, like, it looks like what you would have in a DAW, where it's just this sound for this duration over this sound for this duration. And yeah, it was really interesting to incorporate that into my creative process, and really have somebody go, hey, I can see what you're trying to do, and here's something that may help you better achieve that, rather than this stiff method that you're trying to use. And to have somebody there, giving me that hard, harsh criticism, because to this day, I'm here to tell you, I like reading and writing music. I could do it. It'd take me a long time to transcribe a piece of music, but I could do it. I'm not gonna like read and follow along with you. You give me chords over words, I'll wreck it all day long. You know, like, I can play rhythm guitar well, but I cannot compose music. And there's a sharp, distinctive difference between the two. And someone like you were saying, to have a polymath on your side, to have somebody like David, who can hop in the studio and play all of these instruments, and if he needed to, chart them out, write them out. That's an amazing tool to be able to have at your side, and not one that many bands out there actively have. Most of the musicians that you have out there are, you know, more garage band musicians, stuff like that. They may have taken some lessons at some point, but are they a fully trained composer in that right? Probably not.
It feels like that's a little bit of an edge that we have that seems to be appreciated by the audiophiles of the world and the sound nerds of the world and the music nerds of the world, because that's something that we hear regularly, and it's something that we infused into the music from the conception to the final mastering phase, where we had it mastered at whatever it is, 192. so that we could put it on 180 gram vinyl. Yep. It's something that's really important to us, and I'm grateful for the contributions of David and the rest of the band, who are serious, serious nerds, like really, really talented musicians that are heavy hitters, just complete monsters. And as monstrous as their talent and their skill is in interpreting the ideas of my heart, which is just the most precious, intimate thing ever, that's how big their hearts are as well. And it's incredible. Every second of making this record with these cats, I would look around and just count my blessings because of that skill that David has is abundantly clear in almost everyone who played on this record.
Well, and we're gonna play a clip here in a minute that I think really I chose the clip earlier because I think it really expresses a lot, like I said, the energy and the vibe of the band. The song that we're about to listen to in a minute is one of those that is literally considered almost untouchable when it comes to covering it, when it comes to engineering it. It is still looked at to this day as one of the best engineered, best arranged songs ever. We'll be listening to Iggy T and the Crazy Makers version of Unchained Melody. But before we do, David, tell us a little bit about your process when it comes to producing music like this, when it comes to really trying to capture a moment but put your own flavor on it as far as composition. Things like that, because this is one that I think y'all really do take it by the coattails and take it to a whole nother place.
Well, shoot, thank you. I mean, you know, Sarah kind of touched on this a little earlier. I mean, my background going to Berklee College of Music, I was able to learn a lot about a lot of different things and kind of hone in some of my musical chops. And going a little too far with it, like learning way too much jazz theory and then backing off and trying to forget a bunch of it. Learning a lot about production, engineering, mixing, mastering, recording techniques, everything that like can help get good sounds. But then, you know, not going super freaky deep on everything just so that I can keep the creativity going. But one of my favorite things that I learned while I was at Berklee was the technique of reharmonization. And so taking a melody, but then changing the chords underneath it. And that's what we did with this particular song, where we kind of took it from a major into a minor kind of vibe and keeping basically the melody pretty much the same, but changing the underlying chords that give it even more of a subdued kind of vibe. And so that was like the first little, I don't know, I'd call it maybe a harmonic trick to kind of like change it up. And then the vibe, the feel, the, you know, the way that Sarah delivers melodies is, you know, it's just untouchable and just has a rhythm that it's just something that she delivers it a little bit behind the beat, which is like some of my favorite singers of all time do that. Yeah. And it just comes naturally to her. I try to do it. I can't really just do it. Like, yeah, not a lot of people can do it.
There is a lazy slank to it that is very distinctive.
Yep. That's my next band name. My solo project.
Lazy slank.
Slank.
You're welcome.
Please. Yeah, please tell me this is recorded.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We're on it.
You can have it. You can have it. It's yours.
Yeah,
it's yours. Take it.
This girl.
Because, like you said, that is a hard, hard style to deliver. You know, it's like the difference between being a pocket bassist and that guy who can just kind of step out and not be a lead bassist. You know, like it's... There's such a delicate line to tread, and you guys do it so incredibly well, and you do such a great job. Like I said, this is one of those songs that engineering-wise is still held up to this day. and the way that you've captured it, the way that you've kind of transformed it. Like my wife always says, like, I don't know why everybody finds this song so romantic. Like, this is a horrible song. Like, like, this is a horrible breakup song. And it, what's interesting is that, like you said, because of the minors going on underneath it, there really is kind of this dark overtone that comes out in it, that I think befits the song and the lyrics so well, and is, like I said, a version and a real translation of the piece that has never been done before.
Yeah, it was actually a beautiful opportunity that was given to us by a dear friend and a publishing administrator who owns the publishing for, or admins, and what do you call it, David?
Well, her
owns the publisher, her publishing company.
Her husband's father wrote the song.
Right. Oh. So we have a, we had a unique opportunity to try a cover. We did ask, you know, do you mind if we turn it on its head a little bit? Of course, these things have to be approved. And the response that we got from both sides, there were two original songwriters, and since they have passed, their children operate the estate of the song. And so one of the words that we got back from the other songwriter's son was, wow, creepy, I love it.
I was like, yes, I'm into that. Yeah, like, it really does sound like something that you would see in a love scene on, like, American Horror Story or something like that.
I would love it for this song to get licensed. So, like,
it really does have a character. It's one of my favorite songs of all time, mainly because of, like I said, the arrangement, the way that the song moves is beautifully done, and the way that your arrangement translates that into a new modern way is so beautifully and amazingly done. Let's take just a minute and listen to some of Unchained Melody by Iggy T and the Crazy Makers. Like I said, just such a great modern translation of a classic song that has been done by, of course, the Righteous Brothers. I know Hall & Oates did a great version of it. And it's, there are people that have done versions, and there are people that have done good versions. I would pop this one right up there with the between the original and the Hall & Oates version.
Whoa.
And that is just, like I said, it's the translation, the way in which it's done, the literal bravado with which y'all have done it. Like I said, you took it by the coattails and took it somewhere else entirely.
I do want to mention too that we in this version we've used the second bridge, which is not in, it's in the original version, but it's not in the Righteous Brothers version.
I think only one major production of this song that I've heard of or that we've been made aware of has that second bridge, part about the mountains.
Yep.
Lonely mountains gaze at the stars, So it did make the track a little bit longer, but I loved the lyrics of it so much. And I couldn't imagine why anyone wouldn't put it in, but I guess for pop purposes. You know, you kind of cut things, but
well, and it, especially because it was already, especially for the time, close to not radio friendly time wise.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, like now you can kind of push that range a little bit more. I mean, once a year you'll hear 2112 on the radio, you know, like whenever they do the uninterrupted New Year's, like we're going to do 89 hours of straight music. Maybe you'll hear uncut 2112 that's like 18 minutes long. aside from that, you're going to hear the radio cut,
yes,
you know, that's like 3.5. Boom.
Yeah.
It's succinct. There it is. That was the formula. And you send it out the door.
Yeah.
So right. That means we're going to chop a bridge verse out of it. We're going to chop a bridge verse. Yeah. We can do that.
Yeah.
Well, in the day, Harry Belafonte, who I think did the full version, he was not afraid.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
He's not afraid. He's a good dude. Anyway,
when we were discussing how to reimagine this, we actually started this process by doing it pretty straight, and we even recorded a version, if I recall, just trying to do a demo of it, pretty straight interpretation, and I was like, "This is not."
I bet
working.
That hurt.
I was just like, "It's not working. Can we try something different?" And with David's experiment, this is how it often works as we co-write together. It's pretty fascinating. I find the process fascinating, but David will play with some reharmonizations and then that will inspire a melody in me. And I don't know the technical aspects of why I'm singing the melody this way, but it's just how I feel it and hear it. And he can then, we're weaving in and out of each other through this process. I also find that picking kind of a concept and tapping into an emotion for me helps me develop how I see or hear the song going. And I was wondering, what would this song be like from the perspective of a woman? And if the woman is the one who's perhaps on the road, on tour, I kept seeing these kind of dark streets and these, you know, wet streets with street lamps that are old school, and this woman sitting in a restaurant at a table for two, looking out the window, and just really, she's feeling lonely. She's longing for her love. What does that look like? And it kind of got a little sexy too. I hear that a lot, that there's like a little sexiness to this version, and that perhaps leads to the creepiness for the people who have originally heard this really wholesome song. like leave it to me to make it sexy.
Well, but that's what's so interesting. Like I said, my wife's interpretation of the song is like, my God, this is the saddest song ever. You know, like for me, it's always been a romantic song. Like you said, somebody longing after someone they love. For her, it's like, this person obviously wants to leave you. What's the problem here? You know?
And then we go back to the song All Caught Up, and we've gone full circle.
Exactly.
Not working. I'm over here spending all my time looking out windows sad.
Yeah, well, but like I said, the way that your lyric works, the honesty with which you write, even came out in your translation of those lyrics, as opposed to trying to faithfully, because like you said, when you tried to faithfully recreate what others had done, it just didn't feel right.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You didn't know why. Not necessarily that it didn't sound good. You know, you're all talented musicians. I'm sure the take was keepable.
It's hard to do a cover that is not that I would ever say this is better than the original, but at least offers something different than the original.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly. And that's what I'm saying. All the others have been great, faithful reproductions of a beautiful and beautiful arrangement. But yours is a totally different transformation of the song and translation of the song, and to do something so brave with something so literally seminal in music and in music writing and in pop music.
Well, people either love it or hate it. We've gotten some flack, and I think that's a
really?
Great sign. If you're getting some flack, you're doing something right, I think.
Absolutely.
I love that aspect of creation too. If you're talking about it and it's making you feel something strongly, then great. Please share.
Were there hard Righteous Brothers fans out there that gave you issues about it?
Well, people generally either say, what an incredible reimagination. Yeah. Wow, that's rad. That's contemporary. That's soulful. That's somebody even said, quoted in one of the feedback that we received was Dan Auerbach should be proud of his influence or something like that. Ooh. Because of the guitar sounds, which I thought was rad.
Yeah.
And then of course there's the traditionalists who are not really available for change or reinterpretation or reimagination. And
yeah.
Hey man, if we got the approval of both of the original songwriters family,
you can shut it.
Yeah. Just shut it.
Yeah. Thanks for the additional press. You know, and it's great that you have that you literally have that attitude though, because so many people would not. So many people would see that as discouragement for the project that they had done, not necessarily as a badge of honor. In the fact of if we're having a kerfuffle going on, that means people are paying attention, and that's a good thing. So and with that in mind, let's start talking a little bit about this new album, Just Can't Get Enough. And some of the inspiration behind that, because you're the single Cake that you've got off that album, I know has some great meaning to you guys and is being put out there right now.
Yeah, that was the song that was chosen as a radio ad and as a lead up to Pride Month. I'm bisexual, so it's a fun kind of tongue-in-cheek, playful expression of what it feels like to be a bisexual woman in a heterosexual relationship, and the question that comes up for myself and every bisexual person that I know, which is, do I have to choose? This feels like I fall in love with humans. I don't fall in love with somebody's gender. I fall in love with the aspects of their heart and their mind and their humor and, you know, their mad skills. Yeah. So that's what this song is about. And it does touch a little bit on the concept of polyamory, which it's not something that worked for me, but it's certainly something in how I operate in the world is very much a live and let live. And who are we to judge anyone else's expression of their sexuality or the way that they move about relationship simply because it's different than our own or unfamiliar? So I think as a whole project and as a whole purposeful, deliberately intentioned album, there are some pretty strong messages, and a lot of it has to do with love, acceptance, equality, justice, social justice, inclusivity, talking about hard things in ways that hopefully can bridge the gap between some of this divisiveness that we've been experiencing over the last bunch of years that this record has been in production.
That is so beautifully said, Sarah. And how amazing of you to, number one, be so open with yourself and in sharing that, and for actively having, I would say, literally the patriotism to say the thing that you're saying and to write the music the way that you do, where it is unapologetic. It is about freedom. It is about doing what is right and real inside yourself. And like you said, very much a live and let live mentality. That is something that is very forgotten in our society today. So great for you for bringing that concept back to people.
Thank you. Thanks for acknowledging that.
Well, and what has it been like for you guys, especially right now with the new album coming out June 5th? This typically would have been a time that you would have been out at many pride festivals, things like that, playing and promoting this and really, really getting out there and spreading the word about this beautiful concept and message. What's it been like for you guys to kind of be on lockdown and away from that?
Yeah, trying to figure out how to share the music is a different kind of challenge right now. Obviously, well, I don't know if it's obvious, but to me, I would love to be out on stage playing every day, playing, you know, touring around and meeting folks and sharing music and being inspired by everybody. But yeah, now, you know, at least for me personally, I'm trying to set up some live streaming situations. So I've got a couple of cameras going. I've got a little Airstream set up going on, music studio and then Airstream.
Nice.
And want to start, broadcasting from that. And, you know, along with the launch, the sort of relaunch of the record label that this album is coming out on, mm-hmm. that's happening this on Sunday. So like, it's kind of a celebration of all of this happening. So, I mean, all we can really do is, you know, talk to people and put some stuff out there on the socials.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it's challenging. It's, and so many people, I mean, we're struggling with it, but I mean, with like you and your business and so many people in the live music business, I mean,
yeah.
Shoot, man, the hope, like when can we actually get together again? And like, oh man, I just feel for so many people that are struggling hard right now. So I'm really hoping that we can figure something out and be able to get together soon. The technology is fortunately, you know, being able to bring us together in some creative new ways, which I think will push the boundaries of what's possible, even when we can get back together. And there'll be a nice combination of the two.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I've been telling people is like, you know, this is causing a lot of creativity very rapidly in a lot of different areas in our mm-hmm. field and in our industry. And to see the marriage of these two things once everything susses out is going to be something really cool. Mm-hmm. Even the other day, I had a friend of mine that does programming and things like that contact me and send me a demo where it looked like an old Sims game. Like, like that's what the presenter was up on stage, and you had like a 3D view where you could look around the room, and it was like, dude, this is great. This is awesome. Nice. Like, imagine being able to do a live stream show like that where somebody can sit in a VR helmet at home and be part of the crowd and see a virtual you up on stage performing.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really cool concepts like that going on, where once it's finished, like, you'd still be able to buy a digital ticket that way.
Mm-hmm.
That could mm-hmm. still be going on. So whole new platforms, whole new realms of creativity are going on, which is a plus, but at the same time, we miss that live synergistic fix that only comes from the stage. It really does. There is something that comes from that is literally like no other.
Who's going to build the first virtual mosh pit?
Right.
You know,
you know, everybody be careful. Put your glasses up in the cabinets.
Yeah. I just had like horrible images in my head as you said that.
Yeah, like, maybe put your dog in the crate.
But even, fourth thing.
Like, there's no consent for the dog to be in the mosh pit virtually. Like, you have to put the dog up.
You know, I used to say that too. Like, even the hippie jam bands that I worked with, like, what kind of torturous person are you that you're bringing the dog to a club? It's loud enough for a human being. That poor thing.
Right.
Like, it must be so entirely loud in their head. cool that your dog's there. Service dog, totally different. But even still, it's one of those like, wow. Okay. Here in Austin, it's great because you see people going out all the time to like ACL with their 4-year-olds with like, you know, flight headphones on, like what air crews wear, you know, like these huge muffs. And it's like, you just can't not go. That's kind of cool. You're going to take the extremes to make sure that your son has that experience too. And good on your parents for making sure that they are exposed to art. That I think is one of the biggest things that's gone on in all this, is that kids have not been able to like go to dance class. All that kind of stuff, you know. So we as artists appreciate that. And the fact that you guys have gone through the effort to make your single Cake off the upcoming album, Just Can't Get Enough, basically would free for people to be able to use for their streaming pride parades, stuff like that. That's great. That's fantastic. That is exactly what we as artists need to be doing to support ourselves, to support our communities. So
yeah, thank you so much. And it is so far, it's premiering at Denver Pride Festival, and it's available for any of the other Pride festivals around the world. So if anybody is looking to gain access to that, you can go to our website at IggyTandTheCrazyMakers.com. And on the contact form, you can get a hold of our PR marketing person, and she will happily share that with you.
Yeah, they are more than cooperative with everything, folks. So please do reach out to them. Make sure that you get your copy of that single for your digital pride parade, anything like that. Thank you guys so much for coming on today. Thank you so much for the honest, open conversation. On occasion with artists, especially when you're talking about process, it can be rough. not everybody, I think, really has been asked that question necessarily, like what their real process is. And the fact that you're so open and honest about it is very refreshing. It's nice to see musicians that are in touch with themselves and know where they are going, know what they want, and know how to achieve it.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
As we do go out here on the show, let everybody know where they can go to find you on social media, what platforms they can find your music on, where they can go to order their awesome heavy gram copy of Just Can't Get Enough when it comes out on June 5th.
Yeah, you can check us out on the socials. All the socials have an Iggy T and the Crazy Makers profile, and all the streaming platforms as well, whatever your preference is. And if you want to order the vinyl, you can go to IggyTandTheCrazyMakers.com. And we have a store set up there. We are just launching the pre-order. In fact, I think we're launching it today. So,
yeah, I saw the pre-order link on there.
Yeah, so please feel free to reach out. There's also a contact form on there that you can just hit us up straight to us. So look forward to hearing from you and sharing the music. Thanks for having us on.
Absolutely. Anytime. You guys are welcome to come on this show and promote any music you got anytime. Please do hold the line while we close things out. David, thank you so much for being here as well. While you are online. Oh, David, tell everybody where they can go to have things recorded, mixed. Shameless self-promotion time. Let everybody know where they can where they can go to procure your services as the amazing engineer you are.
Shucks, thanks. It's Underground Sun, S-U-N, so undergroundsun.com. That's where you'll see the music of the artists on the label, obviously including Iggy T and the Crazy Makers. And you can get in touch with me via that website. Would love to hear from you.
All right. Well, while you're online, everybody, checking all of that out, make sure to go on by talkingsoundshow.com. That is where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can find instructional videos. We'll be starting a whole new series of those coming up soon. Had a lot of requests for that. You can also find the industry news section where you can follow RSS feeds from people like Rupert Nee, Black Magic Designs, Sony, all kinds of great stuff. Avid is on there as well. You can also find the industry section. If you go to the freelance AV section, you can find companies that hire freelance AV technicians. So if you're a freelancer like myself out there looking for gigs, moving to a new city because of all this, what have you, Hop on there, check it out. If you don't see companies in a city you live in, pay it forward, folks. Leave us a message. Let us know. That is how we populate the list. While you're online checking all that out, make sure to stop on by hcuniversalnetwork.com. That is where you can get all the episodes. That's where you can get all the other great content. Until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and keep reaching for 11. We'll talk to you soon. Let's go out with a little Iggy T and the Crazy Makers. Morning, then we start to fight. I know.